Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
Welcome back to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton. And there's Dr. Clifton over there.
And there's Dr. Halleck.
Well,
right
hello,
here.
Brothers.
And then there's little old me, Dan Hurst.
You're a doctor. We got three doctors in here.
We have.
With all of these doctors, somebody needs to get a heart transplant.
I'm a paramedic, brother. I ain't no doctor.
You know, we are a podcast with a heart.
We are.
And a spleen.
And we go through and have
here
been
all
through
week, folks.
Those times that that you have gone through. And that's one of the reasons why we do what we do, because we know where a lot of you are. I know it may seem like nobody knows what you're going through, but believe me, there are lots of people that have been through similar things and do understand your heart. And that's one of the reasons why we do this podcast. And we thought in this podcast, I'm going to ask these guys something that we don't have any notes here. We're winging it here. But, you know, as pastors, we get into those situations that are just awkward. You know?
Yes.
They're just awkward. And you don't know what to do because you mishandle it. It could be the end of your ministry. Oh. And if you handle it correctly, it could open up gates of splendor, you know. So, so how do you handle those awkward times? So let's just—I'm just going to kick it off with you, Clifton. What is one of the most awkward things that you've had to deal with in your ministry?
Oh, there was a couple of things. You know, one time I was getting to do a wedding of a church member, and their family came in from out of town, and I don't know why I did this. I was younger, and I was just stupid. One of the family members were there, and. And I said, oh, you must be the bride's grandmother. And she said, no, I'm the bride's mother.
Oh,
so
no.
That, you know, I had the whole weekend with them at that point, which was really, really great to come back from that.
Oh, that's a tough
one. Yeah.
Well, you should have said, well, you look like her grandmother.
And really early in my ministry, like I'm in my early 20s, I was trying to be nice to this new couple who came. And I did the cardinal sin. You know, I asked her, you know, when are you expecting?
And oh,
she said,
no.
I'm not.
No. You've learned your lesson
so
there.
I'm done. You want to talk about leaning into the awkward? Yeah, I wrote the book for sure.
Well, I wasn't expecting that from
and
you.
And even more recently than that, you know, you're adopted, right?
Yeah. Well, I am?
Yeah. You didn't know. Oh, we weren't supposed to tell him. Oh, what? I let it out of the bag. Oh, no. Now what are we going to do? It wasn't really awkward, but it kind of was. I have a friend who's about my age, and you know he's Anglo like me, you know, and I found out that he had a daughter and son-in-law, or son and daughter-in-law. I didn't know which it was that was going to come visit where I was preaching, and so this young lady came up to me, and she was Korean. And she told me who she was, and I said, oh, you must be so-and-so's daughter-in-law, thinking, you know. She said, no, I'm his daughter. And I'm thinking, you know, I just made the assumption, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought, oh, you know, why did I make that assumption? Those kinds of things you do, as a pastor, you're always stepping in it like that, you know, and feeling those awkward moments when I should have just asked her, you know, are you his daughter or daughter-in-law? That would have been a better way to do it than just to assume, well, because you're Korean and he's not, then you must be the daughter-in-law, right?
Yeah.
That was bad on my part.
But, you know, a lot of times when we get into those situations, people have already dealt with similar situations in the past, too.
I know,
so
but...
you're not the only one.
Well, hopefully not the one who I thought she was pregnant and she wasn't.
I'll bet she has dealt with that.
I don't know, but guys, don't go there. Just don't do that. And you're better off to say, are you the bride's mother? Oh, no, I'm her grandmother. That's a much better way of doing it than the other way around.
Well, and then, you know, just ongoingly, you're going to have all of us experience this. You're in a small group at someone's home, and there's a new couple that comes, and the guy is a talker.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And
oh, man.
And what he says is not helpful. Mm-hmm. And he's cracking jokes and making fun of people, and you're looking around the room, and everybody is it's just cringy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Creepy, too.
And that's awkward.
Yeah.
And so what do you do in that situation? What do you do in this situation? I'll give you a few more scenarios. I was doing a wedding this last summer, and we're getting ready to I'm with the guy and his brother and another dude, getting ready to walk in from the side of the church, And he and his brothers almost start going to blows. He starts screaming at it, and everybody's watching. And I'm like, fellas, this is not good. You know, and try it. So in that moment, what do you do to try to calm them down? And we got to go up. And these kinds of scenarios, man, it happens all the time. What do you do? Here's one. When you're preaching, I can tell you a lot of stories of mine. And a guy stands up and starts screaming in the middle of your sermon because he's out of his mind.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
What do you do in these situations? Well, one thing you got to do is just keep cool.
Yeah.
You can't make a big deal out of this. Everybody's feeling awkward, especially if it's a public thing. Mm-hmm. You've got to be the mature one. You've got to be a leader. You know, in a small group setting, you've got to learn how to work with awkward personalities. You just do. That's why everybody loves to talk about small groups. Reality is in most churches, you're lucky if you make it through a semester with everybody still in that group.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
True.
Because here's what you got to do, though. You got to name it. We're all awkward.
Yeah.
We're all weird. We got quirks and we got, you know. And it's almost like the moment you begin saying that, like at our church, one of our sayings is lean into the awkward. Mm-hmm. People are awkward. You're awkward. And it almost lets everybody go, okay, I guess it's okay. We're going to have weirdos. And maybe I'm one of the weirdos. You know what I mean? So part of it is naming the reality, but you do have to learn some skills. I mean, I would say in a small group setting, how do you direct a conversation? How do you affirm somebody in their awkwardness without making them embarrassed, but being able to guide a conversation? Pulling that guy aside. Hey, man, I really appreciate your help. Would you help me get others engaged? There's strategies that are people skill strategies to help lead through the awkward, if that makes sense.
And we do talk about one of the qualifications, and I shouldn't say qualifications, one of the characteristics of a revitalizing pastor is emotional intelligence.
Uh-huh, right.
So what you're talking about here is emotional intelligence, mm-hmm. and what I lacked on many occasions has been emotional intelligence, an ability to read people, read the room, make the right comments for the right time, know how to sort of interrupt something that might be coming, and you see it coming, like you say, somebody's going to dominate a conversation or somebody's going to say something that's a little untoward, and you kind of can head that off, some way of doing that. Just you, when you walk in and you see a pastor who has emotional intelligence, he's in control of that room.
Yeah.
He's in control of his environment.
Yep.
It's not in controlling him.
Yep.
And that is, it can be a learned lesson.
No matter who's in the room.
Right.
No matter who's in the room,
right.
They can control. Sorry to interrupt
you. No, and that's something you can learn is how to be better at emotional intelligence.
Yes.
Or you can just ignore it and be a train wreck.
Well, exactly.
And there are a lot of pastors who have no emotional intelligence. They start talking in a meeting and you realize they're making things worse, not better.
Yeah.
Even by their I pointed to Kyle when I said that.
Or you rebuke people.
Sorry.
I mean, some guys who aren't good.
Fair, was it?
Just pointed to you. They're like this guy right here. He's a total dumpster fire. No, some guys just in a meeting, just by their demeanor, their facial expressions, the way their tone of their voice can just make things, they can move it up a notch when they need to be bringing it down a notch.
Yep. You can hurt people's feelings. Like there's a difference between somebody who's awkward and somebody who's sinning in that room. And I think sometimes pastors, and everybody's watching how you respond to people. You know, that's what you got to remember as a pastor. You're creating a culture in your church and everybody's watching you. If you rebuke people when they're just awkward, you think people are going to feel safe with you?
That's
you think
dangerous.
You know they're not going to. I don't really trust my pastor. I don't want to bring my friends if that's how my pastor might respond. You know, so it's really important. And all this flows out of what we talked about in a previous podcast is you got to love all people, man. You got to love all people. There's no place for favoritism. There's going to be, you may have a few cool people in your church. Great, love them. But you know what? You're going to have others who maybe weren't the cool kid, and you better love them too. In the same way, there's no favoritism.
Yeah. In fact, the Bible has a lot to say about showing favoritism, and you can't do that. And I love what you said about they're going to look and see how you deal with those difficult and challenging people. Let me switch gears a little bit, though, in the next 10 minutes we have left. Okay, that's how we deal with awkward people, by loving them and caring for them and What do you have, Halleck and Hurst, and I'll share mine. What awkwardness do we have that we need to work on in our own lives and our own ministry?
Yeah.
Where are we awkward with people, awkward in our ministry?
Yep.
What do you got? You got anything?
Yeah.
Are you perfect?
No, for sure. I mean, I think this is probably for most of us. I don't like conflict, and I feel like there are times where I don't deal with conflict as well as I should. I can be an avoider for the sake of being a people pleaser in awkward situations. So, I mean, that's part of it, is if you've got somebody, you know, it's like you got to have guts to be able to lean into that. I think that's one. I think another one is learning how to, in a church where people have different ideas and remembering your church is not your church. So, for instance, you've got some sweet lady who's really excited about painting a wall a certain color or putting something up on the wall, and you're going, man, nobody's going to like this. Like, this is not good. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, I do.
And it's just
I
like,
do.
This is rough. And so you got to make a decision, how am I going to deal with this? Because this is going to be awkward no matter what. Either
exactly.
I'm going to hurt her feelings,
right.
or I'm going to be hearing this from other people. You know what I mean? And I mean, that's a scenario that I think sometimes, I would say for me, it can be challenging. Because I don't want to hurt anybody. Do you know what I mean? I want to lead the church well. So learning how to, what hills are hills to die on, and how do you navigate those situations can be really hard. But
if a pastor's primary emphasis is wanting people to like you and be a people pleaser, that will work to a certain degree, but then that becomes a real detriment later on.
Yeah, for sure.
But on the other hand, if you don't care a bit what people think about you,
right,
and you're
yeah.
just going to do it anyway, that'll be a detriment too. So it is a tension we live in there.
It is.
You know,
yeah.
the lady wants to put something on the wall that is going to be totally distracting.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to help anything.
Yeah.
But it means so much to her.
That's right.
How do you deal with that in a way that can be somewhat redemptive?
Yeah.
And that's really a challenge. And I like people understand that the constant battle that pastors go through with stuff like that.
These are if you're listening to this and you're not a pastor, you might be like, man, what a weird situation.
Yeah.
If you're a pastor, you know exactly.
Yeah,
because you got 100 of these things all the time, and you got to navigate.
Yeah, Pastor, my daughter-in-law painted this picture, and I want to put
right.
it up here. Or my dad made this wood carving of the Lord's Supper. We'd like to put it up here on the communion table. You know, what do you do about that?
Or we just bought 300 new Bibles for the church, Pastor. We've got them in, and it's a translation you don't want to use.
That's right.
I mean, it's that kind of stuff all the time, and that's where you've got when you love your people. You earn the right to be able to speak honestly with them
right.
when it's hard.
But those are days you just want to – it's just so difficult.
Oh, it is.
Because it's like it's a no-win situation.
Yeah.
If I let them have this, then it's going to hurt this. If I remove it, it's going to hurt them. And we don't want to end up hurting people. But at the end of the day, you have to keep the long game in the mind.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, why am I here for the long haul? What's my overall – I've got to protect the whole flock. And, you know, she's got to learn that – there's a way of approaching this to ask before you hang it up, and what
That's
do you
right.
do that? Where
it's
do you put it?
A teachable moment. What were you going to say for you? Is there something that stands out to you?
Oh, yeah,
you think
man. I'm awkward in a lot of ways. I'm incredibly insecure. I've gotten better at it as I've gotten older because I don't care as much anymore about what people think. But it just incredibly – and when you operate out of insecurity – You tend to become defensive. You tend to see things that aren't there.
Yeah.
And so, again, my insecurity is it's a failure. It's a sin because I'm secure in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
I'm secure in the gospel. I'm secure in my calling. So I shouldn't be insecure about what people think about me or how they view me. But I do, even to now.
Yep.
And so insecurity, if you operate out of insecurity, you can sometimes lash out at people. You can be cantankerous when you shouldn't be. There's nothing about an insecure person that's good to be around, frankly. So I've got to work harder at being secure. The other awkwardness I have, we've talked about it ad nauseum here, is that, you know, I'm not a real people person. I don't enjoy I'm just not. And I'm a highly introvert. And that sounds like a cop-out, and it can't be. Just because I can't just live like that. I may have been introverted, but the Lord has called me to love people and to be engaged in people's life. So I can't say, well, it doesn't count for me because I'm an introvert. No, it does count for me. I've got to do those things. And if I can't do them in my flesh, then I got to do them in the spirit. And I've got to let the Lord do that
That's
through me.
Good, man.
So daily I have to work at, and you know, the Lord often speaks to me about you need to be more engaged in people. You need to spend more time with people. You need to talk to people more in church. And usually the Lord sounds exactly like Jill. And she says you need to spend more time talking to people. And she's so good at that. And you need to engage with people more and spend time with them. And sometimes we'll even be at dinner with a couple. And again, normally, frankly, it's because she said we're going to go. We need to go to dinner with these people. We need to go to dinner because this is something we need to do.
Yeah.
I would probably never do that.
Right.
Okay. But she understands this is something we need to do for these different people. So we'll go to dinner with them, and we'll be talking. And every now and then, you know, she'll just reach over and she'll just grab my knee and she'll squeeze my knee. And what that means is you're not paying attention and you're not engaged in the conversation. You need to get back into this thing and you need to pay attention. That's not funny. It's not, oh, that's just who I am. Yeah. I got to battle that because I'm supposed to love people and be engaged in their life. And the Lord doesn't ignore me.
Yeah,
why should I ignore these people? But that's a problem I have to deal with, and I've had to deal with it all of my life.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm not going to try to figure out all my mistakes and idiosyncrasies. But I think a lot of it does extend from just feeling insecurity. So I feel better when I'm just alone and I'm not with people and they're not trying to read them and they're not trying to read me. I'd rather just go home and read a book or watch a documentary on the Second World War or something like that as to try to engage with people because I always think, what are they thinking of me? It's just like right now. I'm thinking, everybody listening to this podcast is thinking, why didn't he shut up? He's just rambling. And this doesn't make any sense. So see, I feel insecure.
No, but you know what? But here's the thing. I appreciate you sharing that. Here's the flip side of that. As a guy who... I love people. I get energy from people. As we're talking, it's such a good conversation. I'll tell you where I'm awkward and I don't do very well is when people are really, really hurting. Here's what I mean. I'm a joy guy. I mean, you know me well enough. Like, I want everybody to be up all the time and I want to, you know, when people are really struggling, I love to physically comfort people. I'm not good at like... always to know my tone and what to say, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like if you were to say a pastor, and that's where
I would tell you, if somebody is really struggling, it's just automatic. I just go into this, I empathize with them, I want to be with them, I'm there. It's not hard for me.
Exactly.
That's why I do I do a lot of funerals.
Yeah.
The funeral homes contact me.
Funerals are the hardest.
Okay.
I hate doing funerals.
Okay. And
I love it from the standpoint of being a pastor, but it's the hardest thing.
No, it's so interesting you brought that up because I hadn't thought about this, but the funeral homes contact me. This is a long story how I got started. If somebody doesn't have a pastor, and I'm thinking, dude, if somebody dies, mother dies, and there's no pastor, you know, what a great opportunity. So, I'll meet with them, the family ahead of time in the funeral home. I'll have a chance to talk to them and learn from them. And I do find it fulfilling to, at that point, now I'm thinking about
this,
I get there early. I talk to all of them.
Yeah.
If they have those, something engages me at that point.
That's right.
But just to sit and visit small talk.
Yeah.
It's like, I'd rather get a root canal.
See, and I love that. I love small talk. I thrive in that. So that what's cool about that in our listeners is you've got different wirings.
Yeah, you do.
And it's not one's good or bad.
No.
They're different.
And you got to lean into both of them.
You bet. You totally
do. That's
right.
You got to do the compassion.
That's right.
And I got to do more of the small
talk. That's right.
But it doesn't come natural for
me. Either way.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
So if you have a major crisis in your life, I'm the one. If you want my attention, fall to pieces and I'll be there. If everything's good, I'm probably going to ignore you.
Yeah. Paul Halleck, you know. If
Well, it's funny going back to, I think you shared the example of when we were all at the gas station with that woman and you painted a picture well.
Yeah.
So I'm like trying to make everything go hug and hang out with the kids. This guy's over there buying groceries and I mean, it's like there's just different ways of responding to and that's actually a beautiful thing.
But understanding your awkwardness is really important.
Yeah, for sure.
And knowing where those weaknesses are. And then having a friend or a family member help you overcome those. And Jill does that for me in an incredible way. And she does it in a very loving, constructive way.
Mm.
Not in a nagging, hateful way. I mean, she's really great. So when you got a spouse that really helps you become, if you're better because she's there, that's kind of what marriage is really all about.
Yeah. And she becomes a partner in your ministry.
Exactly.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, awkward. Nothing else to say.
You're not awkward. You have nothing awkward about you.
Oh, nonsense.
Right?
You know, no, I deal with rejection every day.
Yeah, real quick, tell us a little bit of yours before we close.
Just, you know, a lot like Clifton. I think that's why we love each other so much. We're a lot alike. You know, mine, I just deal with rejection. You know, it's not so much insecurity as much as it is I just rejection, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've dealt with that my whole life. But the other thing, you know, and I was thinking about this is disruptions. Mm. I hate disruption.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I have a plan. I want to work my plan. You know, I know what I'm going to do.
Yep.
And if a disruption comes along, I resent it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I can get angry about it.
Yeah, it's
know?
Pretty bad to be a pastor and not like disruptions.
Right.
Because
your whole
life,
disruptions.
Yeah. Do you do well with disruption?
I don't plan anything.
See, that's right. I'm probably in the middle of you two, actually.
Yeah, we couldn't be more different.
Here's an example, and we'll close with this. This happens a lot, you know, for me. And you guys know exactly what I'm talking about. You're done with the service, you know. You're at the end, and somebody wants to come up and talk to you, And there are people standing by that want to talk to you, but this person is just commanding your time, and you don't know how to get away. And I have two or three guys, you know, that know this, you know, and we have a plan. If they see me looking around while I'm talking to this person, that's the sign, come in and rescue me, you know, come in and pull me away.
I have the same thing.
And
actually,
it happens all the time, and disruptions drive me nuts, though. That's it. Anyway, so, all right, I don't know if this podcast has been of any help to anybody or not.
This was an awkward podcast.
It certainly was.
If you've never listened to another before, please listen to a different one, because they got to be better than this one.
Okay. Thank you all so much for spending time with us. And again, thank you to Midwestern Seminary for hosting us here at Spurgeon Library, which is a fabulous place. You must come visit. And to the North American Mission Board for sponsoring us. And thank you. I hope you've subscribed to the podcast so that you'll get notices when new ones come along. And also it helps us in we don't really market, but if people are looking for something, some of the stuff we're talking about, if you subscribe, sometimes that pops up and helps us get the word out. So thanks so much, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.